Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order, please. Jane, could you please do the roll call?
Okay, we'll start the roll call. Abramovich. I thought I saw Ken. Ken Abramovich. Okay. Allman. Elizabeth Allman.
I'm still here. Here?
Thank you. Sorry about that. Barnes.
Here.
Berge. Here. Bret Hart. Here. Cable.
This is Cherry in for Cable.
Oh, thank you very much. Cassio.
Here.
Kaufman.
Here.
Cook.
Here.
Dean.
Here.
DiStefano.
Here.
DiStefano. Thank you. Duke.
Here.
Fallon. Here. Gibson.
Here.
Hanks.
Here.
Hardy.
Here.
Hartman.
Here.
Healy.
This is Phil Patterson for Joanne Healy.
Thank you. Hornig. Horstman. She was here. Johnson.
Here.
Jolly. Lan.
Here.
Larden.
Here.
Lawler.
Here.
Lovecraft.
Here.
Mahoney. Andrew Mahoney. Maxwell.
Here.
McCartney.
Here.
McDonald.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Misra.
Here.
Moser.
Catherine Arndt for Dennis Moser.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you. Newberry.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Radenbaugh. Todd Radenbaugh. Rasley. Rice.
This is Brian Himmelblum serving for Sonny Rice.
Thank you, Brian. Stalcross.
Here.
Skaya. Walter Skaya. Oh.
He'll come later and I'll
okay. Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Wildfear.
Here.
Winfrey.
Here.
And we have Tim Wilson, I believe, here for United Academics.
Here.
Tim here? Okay. And just want to acknowledge we have Katie Oring and Holly Sharuth here for Libby Eddy, who's traveling. Do we have anyone from staff council? We have Chris Beck. Anyone from ASUAF? Okay, we probably will for future meetings. Anyone from athletics? We have Dean Paul Lair.
Here.
Any other committee chairs, Cindy Hardy or Jennifer Schell? Okay. And we have our provost. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to approve the minutes from the last meeting, from that was the May meeting. Can I have a
second?
Okay, any objections? Okay, approved. And then I would like to adopt the agenda for today, and just a couple of comments about this. This is kind of, in some ways, a special topic Senate meeting. Normally, we would have more of a variety of topics, but we felt that today, because of the urgency of the core revisions and the DERs, we would kind of focus solely on that. And so there are some other issues that will then start in October. So again, this is sort of the purpose of this is to kind of have a concentrated focus in one particular area, just to give you an explanation. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Second.
Okay. Any objections? Adopted. Thank you. Okay, it looks like we have currently no motions pending. Ones that were passed in the spring were all approved, so that is good news. So I would really like to welcome you. It's good to see faces from last year as well as some new members of the Senate. So again, warm welcome. There are a lot of important topics on our agenda this year, and so we'll all have to really wrap our minds around those and work hard. Debbie and I have been going to the various convocations and early semester faculty meetings of all the schools, colleges, and institutes. We haven't made our way all the way around yet, but we've been to several. Which is always a great opportunity to get to know faculty and talk a little bit about their special issues. So we will continue doing that, but it's pretty clear what the types of things are that are in people's minds, and I'll talk a little bit about what I see as the really big ones. The important thing, I think, for this year is really for all of us to stay informed on the issues, which means not only sort of quickly looking over the agenda before the meetings, and I know how tempting that is, been there, done it myself, but to really, you know, make an effort to understand what the issues are, because we'll have to make some important decisions here. So stay informed, stay engaged in your committees. Again, all of the committees will have important issues to deal with this year. So let me just talk a couple of minutes, really, about what I see as the big issues. The really huge one is the revision of our core and, more particularly, the general education requirements, which are part of the core. And that's what this meeting really is about today. But this is only the introduction. We did sort of a practice run of this in the administrative committee. And, of course, you know, we didn't get through, even within that smaller group, we didn't get through all of the important issues attached to that. So, you know, today really will just be the introduction, the starting point. For some of you, it'll be a repetition of what we sort of try to communicate at the end of last year. For some of you, it'll be new. Either way, it'll be a good refresher and hopefully a more in-depth analysis and discussion of what the problems and issues are that are facing us with revising both general education requirements and our core. So that is the big one, and we will be dealing with that all year. And as you know, this is nothing new. I mean, there have been groups of people working on that for over 4 years already. So this is the big issue for today, for this year. Common calendar is another one. Those of you who were on the Senate last year heard it come up. It's probably the news of a mandate to develop a common calendar across the three different University of Alaska institutions may have trickled down, but that's the task the Senate and our university leaders have is to come up with a calendar as well as a common course schedule. So it's not just the beginning and end dates of semesters, which is tricky enough for a number of reasons, but also to have a common course schedule. I think this is, you know, I maybe shouldn't be saying this in public, but my personal guess is that UAF course calendar will probably be closer to the sort of structure that we come up with than, for example, UAAs, because they're on a 4-day teaching schedule, and and there are reasons for doing it that way, and they do some teaching on Fridays, but most likely, I think we will have less change than maybe some of our colleagues. Some other issues have to do with technology. As you know, we're phasing in Faculty 180. This is the time. We're all doing it. I did my annual activities report with it last year. I was one of, I think, about 80 people who piloted it last year. Personally, I had no trouble with it, but I do know that for different kinds of faculty, there were different kinds of issues. So I know that my experience wasn't representative, but I think it'll be good for us in terms of managing the information that we provide anyway, and any problems that still exist with it, obviously we need to work on. There's also there will be a committee working on moving forward on electronic student course evaluations. Most of you know that they're one of our Senate committees, led by Franz Meyer, the faculty, what does it stand for again?
Faculty Assessment
and Development. Right, exactly. And they did a phenomenal, I mean really truly phenomenal job of looking at different software packages that do electronic course evaluations. And they were, there were multiple rounds of sifting through the pros and cons of them and evaluating what such a package should do to begin with and how that fits in with what we needed to do. I was then part of a smaller group who kind of took a more close look at the final four products. And out of those four, one was selected. And so now this year we need to work on developing the questions we're going to use. We don't have to write them ourselves, but we need to select the set of questions and the format, and we need to pilot it, obviously. So there'll be people working on that this year. So this will come back to the Senate in various forms for input and discussion, so you'll be hearing more about that. Another sort of quick one that Provost Hendricks will expand on a little bit more, the Faculty Alliance, who will be heavily involved in all of the issues, well, not the technology issues, but all of the GERC and the general education issues. But Faculty Alliance was also sent a memorandum to President Gamble requesting a competitive national search to replace Dana Thomas as the VP for Academic Affairs. Dana, as you may know, is retiring in December, right? December. And so a replacement needs to be found, and so we, Faculty Affairs, probably among others, requested that to be a competitive search, and President Gamble agreed, and Provost Hendricks will talk a little bit more about that process, so you'll be hearing more about that as well. So that's really all the time I want to take, but again, welcome. It's really wonderful to see you, and I hope we'll have a good year making good decisions and being thoughtful about these fairly complex issues that are facing us.
Okay. I was waiting for some questions for Cecile, but let me get started. I hope. So I have nothing much to add because Cecile has pretty much covered everything, and thank you, Cecile, for covering everything. I just want to welcome again all of you and would like to work this year to accomplish the goals that have come forward. I'll work closely with the Senate and with the Senate leadership and Alliance leadership, and I would acknowledge David Valentine, who is the Alliance chair, is doing a wonderful job at this point in moving matters that are common to all three universities, and he needs help also. So basically, my point is that we have once a month a meeting is not sufficient. And as Cecil mentioned, let's get vested. We want to go back and seek information from our colleagues. We want to bring it here, and that process should, I know it's additional work, but it's an email away sometimes, and sometimes it gives us a lot of information by just sending out an email to the faculty that you represent, and that's important. If you cannot bring something here, there is always a public comment time. Please request the faculty member to be here and make a public comment. But getting vested in the process helps, because that's where you don't have a heartache later on that my view was not addressed in by the Senate. We have a responsibility as the Faculty Senate, and we need to move forward with that responsibility. And with that, I'll stop because we are running out of time and we have a lot to cover. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll try to move fairly quickly through my items. First, I've supplied to the Faculty Senate office, and it's included with your agenda, a report on tenure and promotion, fourth and sixth year review outcomes for last academic year. And I think that report is reasonably self-explanatory. The vast majority of candidates were successful in either having a positive review or in succeeding in their promotion or tenure application. I also like to add that although it's a lot of work, there were over 50 files for me to review last year. I actually enjoy it. It's wonderful to see the accomplishments of faculty all summarized in those folders, and I appreciate all the work that people put together, put into putting those files together. The next item Cecile already talked about a bit, and that is the upcoming vacancy in the Vice President for Academic Affairs and Research position at Statewide. And I don't actually know more about the process of the search than Cecile does, because the decision to have a national search for this position is a relatively new one. But what I do want to do is to encourage those of you who have the requisite substantial faculty and leadership experience to consider applying for the position. This position is very important to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, as well as to the other two universities in the UA system. It requires somebody who can be reasonably impartial in working with the three institutions. So we can't hope for, or we don't even really want, someone who is excessively partisan to any one institution. But we do need somebody who is very, very familiar with how academic institutions work. UA Statewide Administration is mostly drawn from other walks of life rather than academe. There are very few people employed there now that have extensive experience in the academic realm, particularly as faculty members. In that role as VPAAR, it is really important to have that understanding of how universities function, how the shared governance process works, and why it's important. So please, if you feel that you're qualified for the position, consider throwing your hat in the ring. Or if you're not really at the stage where you'd want to consider such a position, then think about your colleagues around the university and who might be the person you would like to see in that leadership role for the system. Final thing that I'll talk briefly about is special program review. And up till now, up until the last year, program review has referred to review of academic programs. But after the Board of Regents pointed out that their policy on program review actually applies to everything that the university does, program review, as many of you know, has been expanded to include research, various kinds of administrative and student services, and so on. But the special program review that I'm referring to is the special program reviews that are mandated by the Chancellor's memo of earlier in the summer, where he reported on the outcomes of the, first of all, the BOG process, and then secondly, following on that, the Planning and Budget Committee process. whereby we reviewed a very large number of suggestions about how the university could operate more efficiently and effectively, how the university can deal with the existing funding reductions and potential future funding reductions from the legislature. And part of the chancellor's memo was the commitment to carry out special program reviews in certain areas, first of all, of certain lower enrollment academic programs, and that process will follow a very similar process to the ordinary academic program review. It will just be focused on certain programs. But beyond that, program reviews of e-learning, summer sessions, marketing and communications and public information, athletics, KUAC. And these special program reviews, in some cases, are clearly in areas where the Faculty Senate would want to have a specific role. And the Chancellor's already spoken with Cecile and Debu Misra about the participation of designated Senate representatives on some of these committees. Others, maybe not so clearly at the core interests of the Faculty Senate, but nonetheless, the Chancellor's asked me to say that he's eager to receive volunteers from among the membership of the Faculty Senate or other faculty who have particular interests in any of these areas and who would like to be members of some of these committees. Now, depending, of course, on the response, we may not be able to guarantee a position to everyone who would like to participate. But I do encourage you to express your interests, if you have them, in any of these areas, either to Cecile Lardon, Debu Misra, or myself, and we'll be sure to pass the names on to the Chancellor. Debu Misra and Cecile Lardon will be making specific appointments to some of the committees on behalf of the Faculty Senate. So thanks for your participation, and we'll look forward to a very interesting year.
Yeah, and I think this, just to kind of back this up, I think this is a perfect example of, you know, really important things we'll all have to get involved in. As you know, there were two committees in the spring who worked on budget issues, and having served actually on both of those, it was really gut-wrenching to look at the types of decisions that had to be made. And, you know, Chris Beck's in the back, he's nodding, he also was part of that group. And so these special, and David Valentine, you know, it was really, really hard work. And there was, how should I put it, there were a few opportunities to deliver good news. So it's really, really important that we participate in these committees. They're not glamorous or anything, but they're important because important decisions are made based on them. And you know, they require really sort of becoming informed about budgetary issues and programmatic issues. And it's a really great way to understand a little bit more about how the university functions. I mean, I have to say that is one of the real benefits of doing that work, is really gaining a much, much better understanding of how the different parts of this university are interdependent, work interdependently, and sort of rely on each other. So I really encourage you to volunteer to work on those committees. And are they intended to work just this semester or ongoing through the year?
Some of them have been given a target date for completion by the end of this fall semester. Others would be working through the academic year. However, the scheduling is still a little bit in flux. The Chancellor had reviewed an initial plan for getting these done and came to the realization that it was an enormous amount of work that no set of groups could be expected to fully complete. So I think there'll be further information on the specific scheduling of these reviews forthcoming within the next few weeks.
Great. Any questions so far or comments? Okay. Then let's go on to governance report. Chris? If you want, you can scooch in on a corner or you can come up. It's up to you.
I don't have that much.
Yeah, there you go.
there's a mic here. You can use her there.
Hi, my name is Chris Bex. I'm for 2014-2015 the president of UAF Staff Council. We got elected in May and took office in June. Looking forward to actually working with this body on some of the major issues that this university faces, and especially employees, both faculty and staff. The three major ones, I guess, we've worked on or are working on. One is the proposed furlough policy. We've worked a lot in Staff Alliance to make suggestions to some of the language changes there, and that I think we're done with that. We've submitted some suggestions to that, but we're really hoping to work with leadership on the regulations for that policy. And I suspect Staff Council's going to be busy with doing a lot of that. The other ones, some other issues we're looking at is a tobacco-free campus or a smoke-free campus, which we'll be involved with. Emergency or weather closure policy or procedure to for staff so that they don't necessarily have to come into work if weather doesn't permit that, and how we deal with that on in different departments. And then the last thing we just actually finished was we did a survey among staff to how to make UAF a better place to work. And out of that, we got lots and lots of feedback on that. Out of that came a summary that we created that was submitted to the Chancellor's office. And he's really committed to a number of these suggestions and hoping to implement them over the course of the year.
So. Would you be willing to share that with us?
Oh, you bet. Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be great. What were some of the main recommendations?
There's areas that came out of that. One is child care and child care facilities, better ones, better parking. I mean, there's some of the common threads there. I think.
What a big surprise.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be happy to share that with you.
That'd be great.
And so, but yeah, it was very nice to hear from the Chancellor that he actually is he's looking at implementing and listening to us on ideas and seeing how we can implement some of the suggestions we've made.
Great.
I think that's about all. I don't know if you have any questions or comments.
Yeah, Chris. Actually, when I was attending your staff council meeting, somebody brought up that. Is the faculty senate going to discuss the furlough policies? So do you want to bring that up to the faculty senate so that we can have a look at it? Or?
Yeah, and it was my understanding that we worked through that with Staff Alliance, and the Staff Alliance group created documentation out of that with suggested changes. It was my understanding that was shared with you. It has not been. Okay. I'll make sure you have that.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
The main suggestion we made is to separate temporary reductions in pay from the furlough policy, submit that if there are temporary reductions in pay, to maybe put that in a separate policy. I think that's the main change. I can submit that documentation to you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. There was a question?
Hi, Jane. Chris, I'm Jane Weber. I'm the chair of the Committee on the Status of Women, and we're looking at your resolution on the child care on the Bunnell House. And Nicole had said that she wasn't done transcribing the minutes, but could you send those minutes to me when they're transcribed because we need more information?
Certainly, yeah.
If she's done yet with them, I haven't been able to get a hold of her.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you'll send them.
Yeah. That's the resolution we passed in support of the.
Right, that you had just.
Yeah, I can actually send you that resolution if you'd like.
I have the resolution. I just need the minutes from your last meeting.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank
no
you.
Problem. Be happy to.
Other questions? Great.
Thank you,
Chris. Okay. The student from ASUAF was here briefly before the meeting started, but had to go to class. But I said, please make sure that somebody from ASUAF comes and explained again why that would be important for them. So hopefully in the future we'll have somebody. Dani Shepherd, has she come in since the meeting started? I don't think so. Okay. Tim.
Hi, I'm Tim Wilson. I've been asked to mention a couple of things briefly from United Academics. And the first is regarding annual activity report and specifically having to do with those who are going up for promotion and tenure, I believe. And David, can you tell us a little more about that one? Blow through the mic.
Distinctly or something.
Just move the mic.
Turn on the mic.
It's on.
Okay, it's my fault that I didn't send him the information on time. I'll be very careful in what I'm saying. This year we have to all fill out faculty 180, and also those who are going up for promotion and tenure or post-tenure or pre-tenure review have to submit a comprehensive file. And many of the faculty that are going up for this kind of review have expressed reservation or are unhappy about submitting another annual activity report. According to the CBA, they should. So there is nothing wrong in that. However, United Academics has requested statewide labor to consider dropping at this point. The discussion is not done yet to see if we can drop the faculty 180 submission for faculty members that are going up for promotion tenure or pre- or post-tenure review. I just wanted to stop at that.
Thanks very much. The other item that I've been asked to mention is that the United Academics, together with faculty, staff, students, and community leaders, appear to have led to a reconsideration of the bonus to President Gamble by the Board of Regents. I would like to thank all the people involved with that, Sina Anahita, and other people involved with the petition and protest. I think that's about it.
Questions? Comments?
I think you have to speak loudly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, I realize, of course, nobody wants to do faculty 180 and then do the promotion and tenure and other stuff at the same time, but I'm afraid that as we force ourselves to computerize more and more, that would that person be disadvantaged down the line, that their information wasn't already collected into faculty 180 and be told to go do that year in faculty 180 later? I just want to throw that out there, that we should think about that.
What do you mean by disadvantaged?
What I mean is that if everything is going to be recorded in faculty 180, the next time you go to do something, if the policy changes and you have to have had a year-by-year record in faculty 180 as opposed to having skipped a year because you went up for you did your materials a different way, mm-hmm. you wouldn't have that year in 180, right? So you might later have to go back anyways and fill in 180, and it's always harder to go back and enter data when it's not the current year. So that's all. I just am throwing that out there, that might become a problem later.
Okay, I'll let the provost respond to that.
Well, I think you have a good point. It probably will be several years before we'll be asking people to prepare cumulative reports in Faculty 180, which has that capability, because since people are only just starting to enter their information into it. But at some point, people might indeed find that it would have been a good idea to enter the information for this year in Faculty 180. What the proposed MOA with the union might allow, though, is a little bit more time for them to work on it. That is, the deadline wouldn't necessarily apply if they were just going to fill in the information a little bit later. But we do have to see what Labor Relations is able to do with the request from UNAC. So, you know, none of this is certain as yet. It's only a request from UNAC at this point.
Okay, Laura?
When would we roughly find out about that? Because it is a huge workload to do too. I'm one of the unfortunate people in that position. And so this is one of those things, yeah, I mean, you know, class start, putting a Tenya file together, and doing another activity support is a lot. So when would we find out?
I really don't know because it's dependent on Labor Relations work with UNAC. I can try to find out what the time frame will be and communicate that back to the Senate.
Just a brief comment. One part of the issue is that the deadline for both is the same day. So one way of fixing this in some ways would be a flexible deadline for the annual activity report, like moving it by 2 weeks or so for the people that go up for promotion.
And that could be considered as part of the MOA process, and the dates are actually specified in the collective bargaining agreement, so I don't have the flexibility to unilaterally change them.
Other questions or comments? Okay, Jane.
I guess most important is UAFT is currently in negotiations for a successor contract now. And then I'll mention for the Joint Health Care Committee, we met last Friday, and we're now finalizing the options to receive the rebate on health care for next year. So that'll probably be finalized in October sometime.
Okay, thank you. All right, the only item of new business is sort of a repeat one, one that we discuss and in the past anyway have passed every year. It is a resolution, not a motion, but it's a resolution in support of allowing candidates for promotion, tenure, or comprehensive review to opt for open meetings. And this was discussed and passed by the Administrative Committee and is now before you. But again, this is, you know, this is something a resolution we've passed for many years in a row. I know that there are huge differences between units and how that is handled. Being a faculty member in CLA, I know that most of our peer unit meetings are open, but I know that in other colleges that's not the case. So again, we can't make the rule. We can encourage committees to have their meetings open. Questions? Can I have a motion?
So moved. Second.
Okay, any discussion? Any objections? Okay, thank you. Passed. Okay, so now for the biggest chunk of today's meeting, I'm going to actually hand it over to Reiner, who, as the chair of Curriculum Affairs, has worked on this issue of general education harder than most people, except for the committee members of GERC, the General Education Revitalization Committee. And I do see some members of GERC. Can you maybe stand up and introduce yourselves?
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, Sandra. I'm a former member of GERC. I'm Jonathan Rosenberg. I was chair.
Thanks for coming today. Okay.
Sandra Wild, you're a member of GERC.
Thank you. So, it's great to have members from both committees. So there are really a number of complex issues attached to this. And Reiner has put together sort of a presentation and structure that can help us talk it through and think it through a little bit more so we can start making decisions as the semester and the year progresses. So I would like to hand it over to Reiner at this point.
Is my mic working okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And Reiner, I'm going to give you a signal when it's time for a break, and we can interrupt, and then.
Of course, you can interrupt at any time.
Okay.
As well. Okay. So, I would like you to have either a paper copy or an electronic copy of the agenda for today in front of you, in part so you can make notes on it to yourself and for others. The Faculty Senate has constantly sort of been this tightrope. We meet twice for 2 hours once a month, and on one hand, there's sort of a sense that we really would like the Faculty Senate sometimes just to kind of rubber stamp things, like the last resolution that got rubber stamped. And on the other hand, this is supposed to be the representative body of the faculty, and so we would really like informed, furious, possibly even angry at times, discussion where that's appropriate, where that's appropriate. And where this is kind of getting to is that right now what the Faculty Senate leadership is favoring is that significant changes in what we currently call the core would be made not by votes of the faculty as a whole, in part because it's really hard to define exactly what is a faculty member and what isn't from the standpoint of the undergraduate curricula, but rather by the Faculty Senate. And of course, the Faculty Senate will ultimately be the group that decides whether or not to send things out to the faculty as a whole or to act as the representative body of the Faculty Senate. And certainly if we are going to behave in that fashion, it's absolutely critical that all of us not only are as informed as possible about the issues, but also communicate to the members that we're supposed to be representing, both with regards to our departments and also other departments in our schools. So for example, there's nobody here from the physics department. Which is true. I mean, obviously, we're not based upon having every department here, and somehow we have to get the word out and get a sense from our the people we're supposed to be representing in a larger sense. So what I'm going to be trying to do today is to walk you through the series of handouts with the hope that people will jump in where they have questions or concerns or whatever, but we can still make through most of it or even the whole thing within an hour. To give you a sense of what we're going to be trying to achieve, where we are right now, what a lot of the problems are, and how we're, and in a sense also perhaps of a straw vote of, you know, like, well, how do you feel about acting for the faculty as a whole? Is that scary or what? I would like you to dial to page 5 of the agenda, which is labeled Attachment 1. Actually, I think it's labeled Attach 1. And I'd like to start with you, and of course many of you have seen some version of this before, sort of in the middle of this handout where I've written core old terminology, or I should say current terminology. Our undergraduate core consists, as we see it, of effectively two parts. One part is the general education requirement as defined by UA regulations, effectively by the Board of Regents, and the second part are baccalaureate requirements, that is to say things that we UAF add on to the university-defined requirements. And fundamentally, this terminology is a big problem here, and making sure everybody knows what terms we're using is going to be important. Again, the current term that we use for our undergraduate broad-scale requirements is core, and that's going to be changing. Now, what essentially a committees have been working on this for years, essentially started with the whole problem of how can we assess how well our core is working. We can't, and so how can we modify it in some fashion so at least we can assess it better as well as making it better altogether? The GERC committee, several members of which, who you now know who they are, have, or various permutations of the GERC committee have been struggling this thing with for years. They came up with a plan, and it was a unified plan, which made a whole lot of sense, except that the Board of Regents handed us a curveball last spring. And that curveball is shown in with a heavy accent near the top of that page 5 of your handout. And I'm not going to insult your intelligence by reading this out loud to you, but I would like you to take 15 seconds now, 30 seconds, and read that portion which is highlighted. This is what the Board of Regents resolved last spring.
In April, just as we were starting to make decisions about the proposal.
Reiner, are you opening up the floor for discussion of this?
Usually, well, okay, let me just say a few more words about it, and then sure, I'll let people jump in.
Actually, Reiner, what I would suggest is that you go through the presentation first, and maybe if people, you know, if you guys could sort of write down your questions or, you know, hold them so we can kind of work our way through it, because some of your questions
and again,
might be answered.
The break would be an obvious time also we can work on some of this, okay?
Yeah.
The part that I put in bold is the part that no one really understands exactly what it means. We're supposed to propose a plan of implementation which covers the non-math and non-English portions of the general education requirements in 2 years. Now, this is a process. So right from the get-go, it's like, what exactly are we supposed to be doing here? And the Faculty Alliance, which consists of the present, past, and current Faculty Senate presidents from the three Faculty Senates is sort of the overall umbrella organization that tries to speak for the faculty as a whole, hence the name Faculty Alliance. And Faculty Alliance has agreed to attempt to create clarification with the Board of Regents on exactly what this is. Nevertheless, our feeling is that we need to do something, and we have some ideas of what we're supposed to be doing, but primarily what this seems to say is that we have to have common general education requirements. Let's spend a moment on what constitutes general education requirements, and that's the next page of the handout, and this one's a little confusing, but the easiest part to understand is the bottom part in bold, where I've written current general education university regulations. Okay, right now, University of Alaska requires that every campus impose these requirements for baccalaureate degrees. Okay, this is called the general education requirement. This is part of what our GERC, our committee has tried to work on, but they've also worked on parts that go outside of that. And so on this sort of diagram on page 5 of your handout, where I wrote GER, BOR, 34 credits, and then have an arrow pointing to the left, that's what this is referring to. And again, we're not really certain what we're supposed to be doing among the three schools, but it's clear that we need to have more commonality than we do now. We're not clear that they're actually saying you must all have exactly the same courses in these things. We think they don't mean that, but we're not really clear. And also, we're only supposed to have a plan by fall 2016, not the actual implementation, but rather the implementation with regards to the common course numbers and everything is only applied to English and math, and that's supposed to be coming soon. Let me put that one off to the side for the moment, and let's concentrate on the right-hand side instead. Okay, so the right-hand side is additional requirements. And again, every of the three universities has the right to impose additional requirements for baccalaureate degrees, and we do. So, for example, right now we have an O&W requirement. That's in addition to that. That's something that we can deal with ourselves, and fundamentally it's something that the Faculty Senate can change as it sees fit. Part of the problem here is that we have two different sorts of past occurrences of things to fall back on. So, for example, when the core was changed to what it is, it happened after it was approved by a vote of the faculty at large some 25 years ago, and the first time it came up, it didn't pass, and all that kind of good stuff. On the other hand, the O&W requirements, in contrast, were not voted on by the faculty as a whole. They were voted on by the faculty senate. So we can say that, well, we can go either way. There's a lot of merit to saying the faculty senate is going to be doing this, but it imposes on us an awful, and I truly mean this in the sense of awe, requirement that when we do make some changes, that we really are acting for the faculty as a whole, and that we've really thought through what we're going to be doing and how we're going to be doing that. So that I have listed three particular items under this right-hand side, one of which is a requirement for a capstone experience. We brought this up to Faculty Senate last spring. Faculty Senate said, we want to know more about this before you actually propose it. And we said, okay. We had intended to bring it as a motion to the meeting today, and the Faculty Senate leadership said, nope, that's too much. Don't do it. So our intention is to bring up this capstone experience requirement to the Faculty Senate at the October meeting with the intention that we would actually vote on it, yes or no, at the November meeting. And this would be, in general, the technique, the mode of operation that we would propose for these UAF-specific requirements is that we're going to try to get several of these things to you over the course of this academic year with the notion that it's going to come up, we'll discuss it, you'll go back to your constituency, we'll either vote on the next meeting or we'll discuss it some more, but whatever. But these things are not going to be, that these things are going to be responsibilities of the Faculty Senate rather than the faculty as a whole. Now, again, the Faculty Senate has the right and obligation to decide whether or not it's going to do that. A second piece that we're hoping to deal with this year is the question of what to do about the O&W requirements. The GIRC committee has proposed that these be replaced with a so-called communications requirement. There are pieces of this which are still not, I don't know how to put this, not acceptable, let's say, to Curricular Affairs Committee, and we're trying to work on some compromises about ways to move forward on this one. But there is a good likelihood that something regarding the O&W requirements will come up this year. And finally, a proposal to create additional attributes onto courses and to make those attributes also part of the requirements has come forward. This one is unbelievable in the sense that right now, UAA uses the term attributes to mean categories, GERs. So right from the get-go, we're going to have to call it something different, because what they call attributes and what GIRC is calling attributes mean completely different things. And this is part of the problems that we're facing in terms of this UA-wide integration, is that even the terms we call things aren't the same, and somehow we're going to have to find our way through that over the course of the next couple of years. Okay.
Can I just add something here?
Please.
So the reason we're kind of separating this out is because of the revision of the core. So we have to revise the general education requirement, but we're already well underway in revising the core. So the baccalaureate requirements are part of the core, and that's why both of these packages, these things of issues are included in this, okay?
Thank you. Keep in mind that there are additional requirements for baccalaureate degrees as well, and that is that each baccalaureate program has its own additional requirements. Jane has put on, in pages 7 and 8, oh, sorry, 8 and 9 of your handout, list the... In fact, the degree requirements for various baccalaureate programs, which include both the current core and their own requirements. And I've tried to diagram that out to a certain extent on page 7 of your handout, which shows two different pie charts, to emphasize the fact that whatever we do as a whole is really tricky because we have such different baccalaureate programs. The upper program, and I picked BA Psychology because I figured if anybody is going to feel hurt, it's probably going to feel confused. She's in the psychology department. And she will feel perfectly free to insult me to my face about it, okay? All right, and so there's a lot of flexibility built into the BA the psychology degree, and there is a big chunk of the degree requirements is the BA-specific additional requirements. This is for 18 credits of social sciences, humanities, and additional math class. In contrast, the BS in electrical engineering, and this one is characteristic of engineering programs in general, has 0% electives, and in fact, in a move which could be considered quasi-legal, the general education requirements are also actually major requirements. We'll get back to this point in a little bit in the meeting. So whatever we do, for example, it's not practicable. It's not politically feasible to say, oh, well, we'll just create some more requirements for our baccalaureate degrees because there's plenty of room in them. There is plenty of room, or at least some room, for additional course requirements in some degree programs, and there is simply no room for additional degree requirements in others. And as a faculty senate, we have to keep this in mind, that when a department or program says, we can't do this, sometimes they're tricking you, but frequently, and in particular in this case, they're not. They are honest. There is no room for this. Okay, let's look at the other side then. And the other side is the whole business with the general education requirements, the 34 credits. Now, as part of this whole business about trying to change our core requirements, the GERC committee said, you know, there are things about the way that we go about doing the general education requirements, which we think are inflexible and could be better done. And not only that, but even the general education requirements themselves. So, for example, if I could get you to dial back to the bottom of page 6, where I've listed the current general education university requirements, under humanities/social sciences, what's required is 6 credits in the social sciences from 2 different disciplines. And the feeling among the GERC was, that's too restrictive. It should be changed. And as a result of this movement, the Faculty Alliance appointed a committee to come up with a common set of learning outcomes, which they made a proposal to, and UAF's Faculty Senate approved last spring. They have yet to be approved by either UAA or UAS, but they're certainly in the pipeline for that. And at the same time, this committee said, you know, with regards to these objectives, we think that university regulations need to be changed. And that box that in the middle that I put a really bold frame around is the next step. And that is to say, what's been proposed by the group which was appointed by Faculty Alliance is that the ground rules for the general education requirements be changed. And this is sort of a vital step here. If we're going to really coordinate better with UAA and UAS in terms of the specifics of our general education requirements outside of English and math, then we need to agree what the rules are going to be. And as you can imagine, changing the rules is messy, but certainly not impossible. And what changing the rules requires is that each of the faculty senates from the 3 institutions agrees to change things exactly the same way, in which case, presumably the provost and the chancellors and the president who actually makes the final decision and says, sure, let's change the rules. This is one of the pieces that we are really, really, really figuring we need to get done this year, because if the rules are in flux, then everything's in flux. If the rules are changed and they're changed the way they're going to be, then we can start to working seriously about, okay, how are we going to make things fit? Actually, what I would propose is that I stop here.
Yeah, we'll take
okay.
a break.
All right. Okay. Now, here's. Can I get people who are on curricular affairs committee also to raise your hand now? I know. Okay. So there's bunches of us here. You've already been introduced to some members of GERC. I would love it if you have any questions about the handout, either so far, or concerns, or anger, or whatever, about either the handout so far or the rest of the handout that I'll try to be working through you with after the break, that you buttonhole one of us or several of us and talk to us about it.
Actually, what I would really prefer is that we don't use what little time we have here just for venting, because it's frustrating for all of us. But, you know, to really sort of have questions and comments that help us move forward.
Right. Agreed. But we have a five-minute break, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's,
I suggest in addition to peeing or puking, wherever else you need to do.
Exactly.
That,
exactly.
Buttonhole.
Exactly.
Yeah. Get together and create something, including these sessions, including seriously say, okay, here's...
Okay, no, you know each other, and I'm talking to him. Anyway.
Okay.
Which is completely intermingled, but
no worries.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to start banging stuff. Start with a little tap. Okay, is everybody properly caffeinated now? Sugar and caffeine, we're all good? Okay, so before we keep going, I would I've invited Jonathan Rosenberg, the former chair of GERC, to come up to the table so he can better participate. And I just wanted to ask him if he had any comments about the presentation so far.
Other than to compliment it. Not much. I think Reiner's presentation is very, very useful, and the two charts in particular. One thing I'd just like to add some emphasis to is the separation that he makes between the GERs and additional requirements. On the one hand, GERC sees those as two necessary parts of a whole, as those additional requirements, the attributes, or whatever they wind up being called, are really essential to the application and overall assessment of a general education program. On the other hand, as I mentioned in the recent CAC meeting, it's in our interest to be kind of legalistic about the difference between the GERs and the additional requirements, because the Regents' mandate is about norming GERs among the three universities. And the way we apply and assess the learning from the GERs can be left in the realm of the autonomous authority of the three universities and the faculty senate to set those requirements. So what we have in these in the list of changed language related to oral communication, written communication skills, et cetera, was actually the product of GELO, the committee that was a committee of the faculty alliance with the idea of loosening up some of what we thought were overly restrictive language in the existing university regulation of GERs in ways that are quite consistent with the goals of general education reform as it's been discussed at all three universities.
I think Jonathan just sort of made a subtle point about something really important, and about the distinction between the GERs and the rest of the baccalaureate requirements. Because when you think about what we consider the core, and in our current core, that was really devised as a comprehensive curriculum, right? What the intention of that core was for students to have sort of a whole package of courses in some, you know, with some choices that would provide sort of a solid foundation upon which they could then build their major requirements. But the idea was that there was a curriculum, not just a list of courses behind that. And I think what is providing so much anguish now by having to sort of separate the GERs from the rest of the baccalaureate requirements is that in some ways it forces us to say, okay, there's this one piece that we have to come to some agreement on with the other institutions, and then we have a challenge of then designing the rest of what we currently call the core to still make up a curriculum as opposed to some separate piece. Am I sort of getting that right? Reiner, am I?
Yes.
Okay. So having said that, I want to hand it back to Reiner, and you know, Jonathan, please feel free to participate in the discussion.
Okay. So what we're going to try to do for the next 30 minutes or so is focus on the left-hand side, I'm dyslexic, on the left-hand side of stuff on page 5, and that is to say, proposed changes in university regulations. Now, where we're at with this is kind of a funny, an awkward place. A committee, GLO, appointed by Faculty Alliance, came up with some recommendations kind of on their own about how general education requirements ought to be changed. They made that report to the Faculty Alliance. Faculty Alliance has not officially taken that up yet. And so in a sense, we're getting a, what's the word here, Dave, preview?
Sure,
a preview of what more or less Faculty Alliance is going to be working at. Assuming that Faculty Alliance endorses, approves, is enthusiastic about these proposed changes, then they would be presented to the three faculty senates for their approval. And again, here's where we're going to be walking this tightrope between simply rubber stamping what Faculty Alliance gives us, because after all, that's what they want us to do. And on the other hand, as a faculty senate, it's our responsibility, in a sense, to approve things that we think ought to be approved, not just because we've been handed them and told, approve this. Dave, is that also true?
Well, yeah. Let me just try to emphasize that the Faculty Alliance is not really a decision-making body. It's much more of a coordinating body. And the idea is to try to come up with as much as possible alignment among the things that are passed by the three faculty senates. But the three faculty senates have the ultimate word on all of this.
Agreed, but nevertheless, someone's going to send something to the three faculty senates, and that's where the Faculty Alliance comes in.
Correct.
Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to go to page 10, and what I'm going to try walking you through for the next 30 minutes are for three kinds of things. And again, this is exactly as it's been presented to Faculty Alliance, but they haven't acted on yet. And there are three kinds of type here. The things that are crossed out are the current wording, which is to be changed. The stuff which is underlined is the proposed wording. And the stuff in bold and commonly, although not always, I'm a little whatever, is my commentary. And part of the problem here is that I try to be as neutral as possible in terms of just sort of raising, here's an issue, as opposed to, and this is what needs to be done, goddammit, is that how can we really think about what we're proposing to change unless we can see the implications? And part of what's been handed to the Faculty Alliance hasn't been that, and these are the implications of the changes. So again, the things which are in bold, usually caps, are my editorial comments and need to be viewed in that fashion. They aren't necessarily truth. Okay, so let's start off at the beginning, atop of page 10. First of all, as part of the university regulations, there are definitions given for the various components of the general education requirements. That makes sense. One of the real anomalies in here is that there's a math requirement, but it's never specified what are acceptable math classes. And there's a quantitative skills definition, but no quantitative skills requirement per se. And we'll see how that leads to confusion later on. And this is true of both the current regulations and the proposed modifications. Okay, so the first thing describes oral communication skills. And it says, and the current wording says blah, 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 and the new wording says blah, 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 prime. Okay. The wording has changed there, so it sounds better. As far as anyone I have talked to knows, there are no practical implications in terms of how these courses would change as a result of the wording changes. It just sounds better, at least so folks felt. Okay. Similarly, under written communication skills, there's a current blah, 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 and there's a revised blah, 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 and nobody envisions that the change in the language would have any practical impact on the courses as offered. It would still be essentially English 111 and English 213 or English 211. Note that, in contrast, UAA also allows instead technical writing, and this is one of those areas of disagreement between the three campuses that, or the three universities, sorry, that needs to be ironed out, or at least the Board of Regents really has told us to iron out. Quantitative skills, there's no change offered in the definition of what constitutes an exposed quantitative skills test, but we'll see this problem later. It's not clear what is the difference between quantitative skills and mathematics, which is not defined. Ma'am. Laura.
The changing audiences part, that's actually, for me, sounding very specifically different. It seems to me that you are specifically learning how to address public audience, scientific audience, or whatever audience classes are actually fulfilling.
Agreed. However, to my knowledge, nobody is planning on using these revised languages as or languages as basis for changing the courses the way they're currently offered.
Could I add something to that briefly? I agree with Reiner. It doesn't, and it's unlikely to change which courses would be used to fill those, but I think this language reflects changes that have taken place since these regulations are written in the way these courses are taught and more generally in the pedagogy of oral and written communication.
David?
I'd also like to add that the word English has been dropped in the new first two new regs. So conceivably, this could mean that foreign languages, oral and written, would fulfill those. So that is a substantial change.
So a department other than English could.
I'm just making the comment about the wording there. So the way that the new regs are worded, English is not required.
Well, and if you were essentially considering that somebody might come in and offer a class that fulfills this, and all of a sudden they are hold to a different standard than ones that are already.
Well, that's a new one on me about foreign languages.
I couldn't hear that last comment, so if...
Sarah, could you grab a mic, please? What did I say?
Well, okay. And
okay, I'm trying to move to a microphone here. So what I said was that any new class that might be developed and wants to fulfill these regulations are held to a different standard than the one that are grandfathered in.
I think the point is that our current classes are at least intended to meet these requirements as written, and that in a sense they violate, if you will, the current language by being different from the current language. Am I right in that one, Jonathan?
I suppose that's possible.
You know what I mean? Or not necessarily violate, but are better described the way they are right now by the proposed language than they are described by the current language.
That was my understanding based on the input we got from the people who actually teach the classes.
Dave, this really is kind of critical. Is it really intended that this change would allow students to meet the oral and or written communication skills by taking a non-English language course?
I apologize for not having a good answer for that. This was just something that I realized in reading this for the first time, so I'm going to have to take a buy on that.
But I think your point is extremely well characterized. Namely, we have to be careful about what we approve because
exactly,
right? Okay. And one wonders if in fact English ought to be reinserted in here in some fashion, or and certainly if one of the implications is that non-English language courses would count. I think that needs to be explicitly stated.
Reiner, can I make a suggestion? Could we sort of collect the specific issues related to some of these so we can get through more of them?
Agreed.
Anna, would that be okay? Because there's a lot more we have to cover, and there'll be opportunities for input on specific.
It's more of a general question at this point, which has to do with the language here. Much of the older language appears to be, there are some specific changes that really would allow the inclusion of other courses. So, for example, and practice would allow the inclusion of labs, for example. But there's also some language changes here that seem unnecessary, and my question is why do we need them if they have no practical difference, and why are we spending so much time on that? But so, for example, is the addition of the point of a communications class is to learn to communicate. So why do we need to add what kind of audience we're communicating to? Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
And there are some incredibly difficult issues coming up, and this seems to me sort of a diversion.
And let me just say that what's going to happen almost certainly is that the three faculty senators are going to be given either this language and they hope to approve or some other language, and to a certain extent, it's up to the Faculty Alliance to see that what gets or to create a process, let's just say, so that we don't wind up wasting a lot of time in the three faculty senators arguing about language changes which have no practical impact. But I see this as being a Faculty Alliance sort of
issue. Right back at you here. So we did discuss this, the Faculty Alliance discussed this language back in March at a retreat. And at that retreat, we started going through it, and Alliance members kind of got frustrated with it, to be honest, and we asked Jello to come back with, well, why were these specific changes recommended? And the chair of the Jello committee wrote a fairly long justification, except that the justification was really about the general nature of it rather than the specific things. So at this point, the Faculty Alliance shares the kind of frustration that you've expressed here. One option might be for a faculty group in this Senate, perhaps Curricular Affairs, to look at these and propose what's the necessary wording that really has to get done and why, because I think we'll be much more successful if we can come in with minimal suggested changes and a strong rationale for that particular set of changes that makes things consistent with the intent of the learning outcomes that Jello proposed and that GIRC proposed for here.
Great.
Okay, so that we will not make that decision here, but thank you. That looks like we really do need to.
It really is a Faculty Alliance.
Yeah.
Piece of business. Seriously.
Well,
and again, part one possibility is Faculty Alliance says, wait, this is not ready for prime time yet. We need to have some kind of committee among the three schools sit down and talk about you know, justifying everything or whatever. But I think saying it's not ready for prime time is a perfectly valid Faculty Alliance, you know. Ken.
So, Reiner, could we maybe then focus on the ones where we know
yes,
there are
ma'am.
Substantive changes?
Yes. Okay, so natural sciences, I could interpret the revised wording to mean that every science class had to have a lab component. I don't know that was the intention, but again, we get back into, certainly if I was going to write up a justification for this revised language, I would probably say this says that there needs to be a lab component because it's an important part of science. The arts. Okay, let's take a quick look at this one. This one really, really has very significant ramifications. Currently, in the university regulations, arts and humanities are kind of tossed together into one paragraph, and that's the one which is labeled 5-6, and starts off with humanities. And the first thing it does is it talks about visual arts and performing arts. Okay, so what the proposal is, and this is a very, very important proposal, I think, is to specifically pull out the arts as opposed to humanities and say, okay, this is what constitutes an acceptable arts class. That's piece number one. Piece number two is that the current wording, and especially the word, okay, provide instruction to as academic disciplines as opposed to those that emphasize acquisition of skills. The key word that's going to be thrown in here or proposed to be thrown in here is instead of as opposed to those that emphasize acquisition of skills is as opposed that emphasize only acquisition of skills. And the argument has been made by several fine arts faculty that, in fact, virtually any skills class, drawing, painting, theater, involves theory as well as practice. So you don't just tell that the painting is more than just color by number. that in fact, this would, the intention is to drastically change the nature of arts courses which would satisfy the requirement. Okay. Humanities is also a big can of worms because, for better or worse, in the university regulations, history is defined as a humanities, whereas UAS defines history, at least with regards to the back to the bachelor's requirements, as a social science. First off, is if we take out the wording that that history is a humanities, that helps to alleviate that problem. But then we're left with the problem that UAA has followed the board of the university regulations and also classifies history as a humanities. And almost certainly, whatever plan that we present about kind of unifying general education requirements among the three universities, it's going to have to involve the fact that we're going to call history the same thing, whether we call it a humanities or a social science. I think almost certainly we're going to have to come up with the same categories for different subjects. And this allows at least for that to be discussed among the universities as opposed to, nope, you're wrong, history's a humanities, change everything. Under the social sciences, one of the key wording is removal of the broad survey courses. And it's an interesting wording because it's the only set of descriptions which uses the terms broad survey course. It's like anything else can be a course, but by God, the social sciences, they have to be broad survey courses. And it's like, okay, why are we doing this? Am I speaking to this one correctly, Jonathan? Okay, thank you. And the intention is, well, shoot, you know, let's just put in some wording which makes it more flexible as opposed to what kind of social science course. And again, the intention of all three of these things we just looked at in the arts, humanities, and social sciences is to vastly broaden the possible courses that students can take to satisfy. This has important implications depending upon exactly how the Board of Regents decides to interpret their, everybody's going to have the same GERs. The more courses there are, perhaps potentially the more difficult it's going to be to make them all the same. And on the other hand, potentially we can work around that. The more choices there are, the more students will choose what they want to do and will presumably benefit by having made their own choices. Okay, those are definitions. And again, keep in mind that there is no definition of what constitutes an acceptable mathematics class. Okay, let's take a look then at page 11. Page 11 then are changes in the specific distribution of those required courses. One of the first pieces right off the get-go is to remove the word minimum after every single time it says minimum in there, and instead to move it at the very beginning. So the proposal is under B at the very top of page 11 that it would now say minimum credit distribution as opposed to credit distribution that had minimums everywhere. Again, what looks like a significant change in terms of, oh my God, they're taking out all these minimums, is they're just moving that around. Okay, the first piece here then is that within the current requirement is for 15 credits of humanities, social sciences, and arts, of which 12 credits are specified, one's left open, and the proposal is to make it much more flexible so that in fact a student must take one fine arts class, one humanities class, one social science class, and then two more of among that group. And among other things, two more among that group. So that would totally change the way we do business in terms of you think about how structured and inflexible the current core is, where you must take this class, you must take this class, you must take this class. This is very, very, very highly flexible in contrast. The other serious or another change here that's proposed is the current requirement is totally bizarre. I don't know any other way to put it. Okay, so the current requirement is for quantitative skills / natural sciences. This is the part that is crossed out. 10 credits, at least 3 credits of which are in math. And again, what's a math class as opposed to a quantitative skills class? And at least 4 credits in natural science, including a laboratory. So there's 7 credits which are specified, 3 credits which are unspecified. The proposal is to change that to you got to take 3 credits of math, you got to take a 4-credit science class, and you've got to take at least 3 more credits, which are among natural sciences, math, and quantitative skills. This is a part where I have heartburn for 2 kinds of reasons, one of which is exactly how do we go about distinguishing between a quantitative skills class and a math class? Does checkbook balancing, does that constitute quantitative skills enough? And I see this as an issue not only within UAAF and committee who's looking over various classes submitted in this fashion, but even worse than trying to find agreement between us and UAA and UAS about what constitutes sufficient quantification to be a quantitative skills class versus another. And again, part of the problem here is that while there is a definition of quantitative skills, there isn't a definition of math, and nowhere is defined what the difference is between the two. I see this as a problem that needs to be worked on, but this is just me. Okay, let's look at 2 more proposed changes. Under C, towards the bottom, or towards the lower half, number 3, current regulation says credit may be counted towards general education or degree requirement, but not both, which seems to be pretty specific. However, bless our pointy little heads, numerous departments within the university use the wording as a means of fulfilling the core requirement in math, take Math 200. Or as a means of fulfilling a specific requirement, take this course, which could be argued as maybe it doesn't actually violate the wording, although I wouldn't even argue that, but it certainly violates the spirit. And the idea about this proposed change is that it sort of essentially legitimizes what we're already doing. And frankly, well, it would legitimize. And there could be some merit in officially saying what we've been doing for decades that looks kind of sort of illegal is now legal. I could go with that. This, number 5, however, is one that's really a stinker. And it's worthwhile looking at, okay, what it says is that each individual university can add general education curricula beyond these courses, and they can be completely different from each other. And this is an addition which I honestly think contravenes both the spirit and the letter of the current law, which is the policy which says that everybody has to have the same general education requirements. Now, there's an easy fix for this one, and that is to simply take out the words general education. So paragraph number 5 would read, additional curricula beyond these common core general education requirements may be implemented, in which case we're not talking about saying that UAA, UAS, and UAF are going to have different general education requirements. We're saying that, yeah, they can have additional requirements. And again, this is already implicit in the regulations by making the statement, again, with the general education cut out, it would make that explicit. Yes, we can have additional requirements that they're not the same, but they're not called the general education.
Okay, Reiner, I'm going to cut in here for a second. We have 10 minutes before I'd like to open
yep.
for public comments. And clearly, we can't deal with this in 10 minutes. But what I would like to suggest is that if there are specific questions anybody has for comprehension, for understanding what is being said in any of this so far, and I will include the provost in this, and then we will have a Senate discussion board where we can, A, collect more questions about the issues. So if your question doesn't get posed today, please put it on the discussion board and somebody will answer. And also where obviously you can discuss some of the issues. And then obviously we'll have segments of future meetings where we'll come back to this. Provost?
I'd just like to clarify Reiner's remarks in that right now what the board has passed is a resolution, and it's not a policy change. I would say, having spoken with board members and listened to them discuss the issues, they do feel strongly that they want common general education requirements for the system, but they have not yet incorporated that into policy.
So I just want that to be a common understanding. And I believe that leaves you with a little bit of flexibility on interpreting how to implement this. And I would be, you know, eager to work with people to try to figure out a path that satisfies the board, is very flexible and accessible to students, but also meets the learning outcomes that we want for the system.
So we will have at least two committees. Well, no, actually four committees. We'll keep working on this. GIRC in some form, the Faculty Alliance. Is DILO still working? No, okay, so not that one anymore. And CAC, of course. So there will be multiple groups of people still working on these issues. Again, this will be the big one this year. So, again, in the last few minutes before we – oh, yeah, David.
I was wondering if I could just elaborate just a little bit on my interpretation of the Board of Regents in this, kind of elaborating on what Provost Hendricks just said. I think the Board of Regents really is trying to accomplish what it sees as good things. It's not aware of a lot of the details that we as faculty are aware of. Where they get frustrated with dealing with faculty is that when they try to move the university in a particular direction, and the faculty comes back and says no, and fights them on it. What I am hearing from Regents and from the president who works with the Regents a lot is that a response that they're much happier with is, well, here's what we can do, and here's why we can't do exactly what you said, and here's some evidence and here's some data as to why. So they can listen to that sort of thing. As Provost Hendrick said, this is a resolution. They're expecting, in some ways, some sort of a pushback, but a pushback is much more effective if we decide to do that, if it's based on evidence. Okay, but the burden of proof, as I see it, is kind of on the faculty to say, you know, here's the evidence and here's why this pathway is better than that pathway. The Board of Regents tends to respond positively when they see the direction moving, when they see things moving in the right direction, even if it's not in lockstep with what might be seen by us as micromanaging. Okay. Thing that I should add that is a positive development in this regard is that the Faculty Alliance Chair is now an ex officio member of the Board of Regents Academic and Student Affairs Committee, which means that there will be a faculty voice in the committee that is first looking at these sorts of resolutions and can feed information from faculty into that part of the decision making, which is a new thing, and it's a very good thing.
And in case you guys don't know, David Valentine is the chair of Faculty Alliance this year. So this is very good. And he has started meeting with President Gamble regularly. And then next year, and this was kind of a fluke in the rotation, but next year I will chair Faculty Alliance. So we will have two UAF faculty chairing for 2 years in a row. And again, this is, you know, we shouldn't go hooray because of partisanship, but that kind of really keeps us very, very much in the loop and very much with an opportunity to drive some of these changes.
Mm-hmm. So I want to follow up, Dave, on some of your comments. Thank you for the helpful remarks about what the board will respond to. For those of you who don't know, I'm the representative for the Department of English. The BOR resolution is creating big problems for us. It is not something we consider implementable. I also have been told that UAA on Friday passed a motion, not a resolution, a motion asking the BOR to reconsider the resolution on changes to the GERS. Also the uniform calendar, but I'm not speaking on that right now. And I would really encourage this body to consider a similar resolution.
Chris, was that the UAA Senate that passed that on Friday?
That's my understanding.
David, have you talked to anybody from UAA about this?
Not directly. I saw some emails that indicated what Chris said, but that's it. Our next Faculty Alliance meeting is this Friday, so I imagine that will be a topic of conversation in that meeting.
So how about this? After the next Faculty Alliance meeting, I will post a follow-up on that. Okay. Yes.
Before we do a knee-jerk reaction with a motion against what the Board of Regents did, I would suggest we learn a lot more about this process. Curricular Affairs Committee members have looked at a lot of this stuff and we're baffled by some of the stuff. We don't understand some of the things that are in there on the Faculty Alliance or JELO's recommendations for modification of the Board of Regents policy. There's all kinds of ways to interpret it. We don't know what the ramifications are. I think what we need to do is ask JELO to put forth some rationale behind what they're recommending so that when the three bodies at UAA, UAF, and UAS take it up, we have some understanding of where this is coming from and the consequences it might have. Because right now we're guessing at what a lot of the implications of these changes are going to be. And I think it would help our committee, but I think all the rest of the faculty in the Senate, to make rational decisions if we understand a little bit more about where this is coming from. And it's coming from JELO. It's not coming from Curricular Affairs.
Yeah. Oh. Sorry.
Oh, it's on? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I guess I sort of accidentally had my hand up, but I was thinking of speaking anyway. So,
I'm sorry.
No, that's great. I'm sorry. I'm David Maxwell. I'm from the math department. And in some sense, we are the vanguard of this in as much as we've all been charged to do this across the system. The math department needs to get it done in 2 years, and we need to have a plan for everybody else in 2 years. And we're also at the stage of scratching our heads and trying to figure out what the heck it is actually that we're supposed to do. There has been no guidance to our department from anybody since the April 4th resolution. My largest concern with the way things are stated right now is there's a loss of our department to innovate under the language that's currently there, and there isn't a mechanism to convey. I don't know what the right mechanism is to convey that back up all the various channels and the kinds of innovation I'm thinking of. For example, there's a requirement that we all have the same prerequisites. And as most of you are probably aware, we have a new prerequisite system at UAF that's being trialed right now. And the sense that things have to be the same is very different than let's try something that's better or has the potential to be better. And the requirement that these things be the same at all institutions is a large inertia then that needs to be overcome to try to innovate. And it even creates a more hostile environment to innovation as well. It just makes, the easy thing to do is, well, your ACT scores are high, ours are low, let's cut them find the middle and move on to other things. And that's not really the kinds of things that we would rather be doing. And the other thing is there's a requirement for same course numbers. And even at that, we have difficult challenges in trying to figure out how to prepare students for math classes at these low levels. And we try various attempts, and you look through the catalogs of the different institutions, and you see that the schools are trying different things. We've got the certain core, the calculuses and the functions for calculus, and these things are the same, and it would probably be not a big deal to try to align these things, but the courses trying to help students prepare and get into that are different in these places. I know that Sandra has been experimenting with different classes, and we've got a new course this year trying to help students get into Calculus 200, and the requirement of same numbers sort of gets in the way of our ability to innovate. So I hope that we'll find a way to sort of address the needs of the Boards of Regents. Absolutely. While simultaneously preserving our department's ability to innovate and try new things and take advantage of the fact that we've got three campuses and use them as sandboxes to try new things, and maybe something we should be doing that we haven't done as well in the past is talking to each other about the kinds of things that actually are working. Anyway, I'll stop
there.
David,
fantastic. I think this is really, and I do need to move on for today, but I think this was the perfect comment for ending the discussion for today, because we should not lose sight of the big picture. I think you're absolutely right. We don't want to get into a corner where we feel we can't move and we can't innovate. And so, I think what Provost Hendricks has said, what David has said, what everybody else has said, is that we need to find ways to keep innovating
and finding, you know, ways to really educate our students. And so, you know, we need to work our way through the system to come up with policies that keep allowing us to do that.
And simultaneously address the needs of the Board of Regents. We should
yeah.
know. Find some middle ground.
But so let's not get caught. Let's not get lost in the weeds. Let's focus on the big picture.
But I just want to emphasize what David just said. That was a perfect comment because what you're doing is you're saying, okay, what's the intent that the Board of Regents has? The Board of Regents is intending to make the student experience better.
Right.
How can we do that and still innovate?
Exactly.
That's exactly the kind of things that we want to bring back to the Board of Regents and say, this is a problem for us. Stay out of the weeds so that we can do this, and we'll make the student experience better. We're going to focus on that.
Exactly.
So that's the intent.
That's
okay,
great.
So thank you. And I know this is frustrating to stop here, but Alex, he's getting up. No, please don't.
Sorry for the change of subject. I just wanted to make an announcement about a new resource for undergraduate advisors. We've created a resource site through the Academic Advising Center. It's kind of taking the place of the old printed advisor manual. It's got all the information on there that undergraduate advisors are going to need. I hope it's very user-friendly. So for example, if you have a question about placement, you can type in placement, and it'll show you all of the information from the different places about placement. It's got links to forms, to the catalog, to all kinds of information that I think will be helpful. The site is totally public. Anyone can go on and look at it, so students can use it as a resource as well. There is a training component to it, and it's a separate link on the page. Sorry, I wasn't quite prepared. One caveat is that in order to go into the training site, you have to have completed your FERPA certification within the previous 12 months. If you haven't done that, there are instructions for doing it right there on the site. Once that's done, there might be a little lag time because that's actually through a different system and that needs to get entered into the system, and then you can go into the training site. It's just a series of 10 questions after each of the 5 modules. When you've completed those questions after each of the modules, you'll get a certificate that says, congratulations, you're a certified undergraduate academic advisor. Your deans, department chairs should get a copy of that. I know that deans have let faculty know, or they should have let faculty know already, that certification will be required to be an undergraduate faculty advisor by the end of this academic year. So there's plenty of time to complete that.
Questions? I know this was a very abrupt.
I know. I was on my way out the door.
What is the website? Do you have an address or anything about it? Oh, okay.
Yes.
There's paper somewhere floating around. Okay.
There are flyers and business cards with the URL. The memo went out to the deans this morning, which they're supposed to distribute to faculty also, that has more information and the URL on it. I want to emphasize that I think it's a really useful resource site, especially for relatively new academic advisors when you have questions. And, of course, the Academic Advising Center is always available for questions as well. Just once. So what we're planning to do is we'll set a time probably in June after the end of the academic year. We'll make updates to the site based on anything that's changed over the year, and then we'll publish something that says this is what's changed in the past year, and we will take it on faith if people look at that.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. And please contact me, contact the Academic Advising Center if you have any questions, or if you have feedback once you go in and look at it. It's brand new, obviously, and we'll find some things that could be better, and we appreciate knowing what those are.
Great. Thank you. There are four more minutes for public comments. Anybody else who'd like to step up? Please.
Hello, my name is Karen Gustafson. I'm a former faculty senate member. At the end of last year, we had discussed at the end of the agenda the department chair policy that needs to be revised, and I just noticed on today's agenda that is not on here, and I just want to strongly encourage the faculty senate to take this matter seriously. The department chair policy has not been revised in a long time, and I think in for faculty oversight. As we get into times when there are more and more administration people in our faculty chairs, it actually is strongly in our best interest as faculty to keep faculty in the department chairs position. So I strongly urge you to please take that motion that we had last year to look at that, revisit that this year, that David Valentine, and when he was president, suggested we do. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sina Anahita, and I'm here to ask Faculty Senate to look at the mandatory reporting rule. We have been, as you found out from your Title IX training, that we are now mandatory reporters. So if a student says anything about sexual harassment or sexual assault or even hints at it during office hours or in a paper or some kind of assignment, you have 24 hours in which you have to report that to one of five campus authorities or you can be reprimanded or terminated. I think this rule was implemented without any kind of shared governance, no input from faculty at all about the kind of negative consequences that could come from this idea that students, if they confide in you in any way and they ask you not to say anything at this moment and help them to think through issues, that now you'll be in violation of this rule. So one of the questions I have about this rule is, who made the rule? Where is the rule located? It's not in Board of Regents policy. How can we be held accountable as faculty members for this rule that is just kind of floating out there? But most importantly, the shared governance was not implemented in the implementation of this rule. So I'd like for Faculty Senate to take that up, and I suggest maybe the Committee on the Status of Women might be an appropriate committee to discuss it.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Just quick one. This came from Kate Quick, who is one of the faculty members in developmental education, I believe, developmental English. So I'm just reading it on her behalf. Please notify all adjuncts who are represented by United Academics Adjuncts, UNAD, and are teaching in your program or department that when they complete any mandatory UA trainings, they should file a timesheet for time spent during the training. The United Academics Adjuncts CBA dictates that UA will pay adjuncts $30 per hour for all mandatory trainings. This is just for information. Thank you.
All right. Any other public comment?
Hi, I'm Michelle Mouton from the Office of Sustainability, and I'm here to let you know that the first UAF Sustainability Master Plan will be coming out very shortly. This is a partnership between the students who are now paying a $20 per semester sustainability fee and the Brundle Group. Over the last 6 months, the Brundle Group has been on campus working with faculty and staff, administrators, and some community members to develop this draft sustainability plan. It will be posted on the Office of Sustainability's website by around the 24th of September. We'll be sending out word to the faculty members to let them know that it's there for public comment. We'll hope that we'll get lots of good comments because faculty at this university are heavily involved in sustainability. At the national level, we've been rated gold under the national organization, and this reflects the numbers of faculty who are involved in research and in curriculum in this area of sustainability. So thank you very much.
Great, thank you. Okay, and we are right on the dot. So can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved.
Second. Objections?
Better not.
Thank you, everybody. And thanks for putting on your thinking hats today. As you can see, we're going to have work.
Jello doesn't exist anymore. I think faculty affairs, I mean the faculty.